for rebuttal?
No more than 5 minutes, Your Honor.
Alrighty. And since we have everybody, counsel, you may begin whenever you're ready.
All right. So kind of an odd way to argue. I've never had the privilege of doing this before, so I'll start as though I'm there. May it please the court. I represent Mr. Hamilton in this appeal from the decisions of the commission and the full commission, questioning whether or not the commission erred when it found that Mr. Hamilton did not fully market his residual capacity while he attempted to rehabilitate to return to play in the NFL. And I know that you have read the briefs and the record, and I'll try not to restate the facts. I want to kind of get to the heart of my argument, which is why I believe the commission erred in finding that Mr. Hamilton was required to market in light of the court's holding in Jones versus the Norfolk Admiral. As the court knows, in Jones, the court found that when a player is involved in aggressive rehab with the focus of returning to work, he is excused from the marketing requirements because of the unique nature of professional athletic employment and the extensive rehabilitation and training that goes into placing a person in a position to resume their career as a professional athlete. And the deputy commissioner found and the commission affirmed that Mr. Hamilton did not fall within the parameters of the standard that this court set a long time ago in the Ty Jones case, really, I thought, on two principal grounds. One of them was that he was not in contact with and under the supervision of the team during the period of his rehabilitation. And I think that the problem with that ties in the second part of this, which is the employer terminated Mr. Hamilton's employment in, I believe it was in March of 2016. And so when the commission found that the reason that he did not fall within the Jones exception was because the employer was not overseeing, supervising, or involved in any way in his rehabilitation. And the second thing they found is that Mr. Hamilton did not reach out to the employer to see if there were light duty opportunities available. And I think the problem with that is the employer has used their decision, unilateral, to end Mr. Hamilton's at-will employment as a defense to his claim that he didn't have to market. Specifically, and I cited the cases that talk about when termination can and cannot be an effective defense to the payment of disability compensation. And here what they've done is they've decided to let him go, and then they use their decision to terminate his employment as a ground for showing that he didn't market his residual capacity, and I don't think that's appropriate under the Act. The second thing is really what I think is an exaltation of form over substance. The second and the other two things that the deputy commissioner found and the full commission affirmed was that Mr. Hamilton had not produced evidence of the substantial kind of rehabilitation that Mr. Jones had undergone in that case to show how much of his effort he was dedicating to his rehabilitation and conditioning to get back to playing. And then the second thing they found is that he did not register at the Virginia Employment Compensation during the period of time that he was engaged in rehabilitation and conditioning with an eye towards returning to full-time employment in the NFL. And so the combination of these two things really make it impossible for Mr. Hamilton to show that his goal was to rehabilitate himself and return to play in the NFL. And, you know, I'm not quite sure what Mr. Hamilton is supposed to be doing, because when the Redskins decided to terminate his employment, their obligation to provide rehabilitation under his standard player contract, which is part of the record, ends. And so Mr. Hamilton is left without any kind of formal medical process to go through in order to undergo the kind of extensive rehabilitation that Mr. Jones was undergoing, and to produce the kind of extensive records that Mr. Jones was able to produce, because in the Jones case, the club was paying for and overseeing the rehabilitation to bring Mr. Jones back. In Mr. Hamilton's case, the employer unilaterally decided not to provide and oversee the medical rehabilitation, thereby preventing Mr. Hamilton from having the kind of record that Mr. Jones had. What Mr. Hamilton did in this case is he dedicated full effort to rehabilitate and condition himself as the treating physician instructed him to. And I'm going to direct the court's attention to the record at page 33, the appendix at page 33, I'm sorry, where I think one of the problems with the commission's order is they sort of misstate the finding of the treating physician. In the commission's order, they specifically conclude that Dr. Anderson, who's the treating doctor, released Mr. Hamilton to return to work full duty without restriction. And that's not at all what he said. First of all, he underwent a revision of an open reduction and internal fixation of the foot in April. And then what Dr. Anderson actually said was that he would be able to return to play professional football if his rehabilitation and conditioning has responded appropriately. So what Dr. Anderson does is he imposes two conditions on Mr. Hamilton's effort or ability to return to work as a professional football player. And those two conditions are, first, rehabilitation of the foot, and second, conditioning to get himself back to play. During
Mr.
the period
Bartola,
of time, yes, I'm not sure which judge this is.
It's Judge Decker. It would be helpful if you would tell us where in the record you're getting these particular points from, since you're saying they're pivotal.
Okay, so the appendix at page 33 is where Dr. Anderson's March 12th, 2017 report is. And he said Mr. Hamilton could return to work playing football professionally if his rehabilitation and conditioning had responded appropriately. The second fact that I wanted to point to in the record was the employer's determination to terminate don't have that at the tip of my fingers. I'll come back to that one. The Redskins' decision to terminate Mr. Hamilton's employment. And then the third set of facts are in the hearing transcript. So beginning at page 36 of Mr. Hamilton's testimony and going through, I guess, around about page 40, starting with where I asked Mr. Hamilton about what he did between December 18th of 2015 and October 3rd of 2016, he was consistently working on the rehab of his foot. Now, this was not done in a medical facility. This was done at trainers in different cities in Iowa and in Texas, where he was, at the same time that he was rehabilitating, he was networking to kind of get himself in a position to where he'd be able to go back to work in the event.
Mr. Bartola,
yes.
In any of this, other than Texas, does he talk at all about how much time was put into the rehab? How many hours?
He does not talk about the hours. He does talk about that in Texas, where he was saying an hour or two per day. And I did look carefully at the record to see if he talked about how much time he spent in Iowa when he was rehabbing, and he did not specifically say that. But I can tell you that it was Mr. Hamilton's testimony, and it was his full-time goal to get himself back in shape to return to work in the NFL. And rather than simply doing that, he was networking himself and using connections he had made through college and his short exposure to the NFL to try to be in a position to hit the ground running in the event that he was unable to get his foot back to the shape. And ultimately, in October, when this opportunity came, and he really did a magnificent job at marketing his residual wage earning capacity, because if you look,
let me ask you this
sure.
on the marketing point, is it a factual finding or a legal finding as to whether a claimant has adequately marketed himself or herself?
Well, I think in this case it's both. I think to the extent that the finding that he did not market his residual earning capacity because of the lack of involvement between he and the team, I think that's a legal question, because their termination should not be able to avoid the payment of workers' compensation benefits by terminating an employee. That's obviously an incredibly dangerous precedent and a slippery slope that has far-reaching effects above and beyond Mr. Hamilton's case.
Mr. Balco, this is Judge Balco.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know that you are into your rebuttal time, but please feel free to continue if you wish.
Well, then I'm going to say this as my last point, because I do tend to repeat myself, and I think I've probably raised all my points. Mr. Hamilton did a magnificent job of marketing his residual wage earning capacity. His average weekly wage in this case was $112,000 a week. And when he went back to work, he had a return-to-work average weekly wage of $2,079, which is about $104,000, for a guy with nothing more than a college education. And so I think to ignore the effect of his efforts to return himself to the labor market while he's simultaneously trying to return to his career as a professional football player misses the purpose of marketing, which is to maximize a person's return to work earnings. So I'll wait to hear what Mr. Trickle has to say and save whatever 2 or 3 minutes I have.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Judge Malvo.
Okay. Mr. Trickle, please go ahead.
Hunters. If I'm not loud enough, please let me know and I'll try to speak louder. The commission finding that the claimant did not make a good faith effort to market is supported by the record, and we respectfully submit there's no precedent to support the claimant's assertion that under these facts he should be excused from the duty to market his work capacity simply because he was able to obtain a temporary position on the practice squad of a professional football team. One factual assertion that needs to be corrected is that this gentleman's employment was not terminated. He was signed to a practice squad week by week at will contract. He would have been signed for 1 week based upon the testimony of the VP and manager of football, VP and general counsel Eric Schaefer, but because of his injury, he was paid for 4 weeks. When the contract ran out, he was not renewed. The team had no interest in him. As Mr. Schaefer testified, they were looking for a body for a practice because they were in playoff contention. So there's no termination of employment. And this gentleman was eligible for rehire, but in football, it's like applying for a first chair position in a major orchestra or for a ballerina position in a first class performance. Many are called, few are chosen. You have to be very good. This
Counsel, this is Judge Malvo. Let me ask you just a quick question that Mr. Barthelo brings up in terms of Admirals versus Jones. He indicates that this is a case that would be analogous, but the things that would set Jones apart in terms of the team support and having the ability for the trainers to work through the team is something that is dispositive or something we should look at when we're considering whether Jones applies. Do you want to address that?
Yes, indeed, Your Honor. First off, if we go through those elements, none are applicable, beginning with the player in Jones was an established player under a contract with a major professional team. This was a player who had an at-will contract with a team on a week-by-week basis and had never made the 53-man roster of any professional football team, nor had he ever played a single play in the NFL. So we don't have an established player, number one. His contract expired. And ironically, despite this intense effort to play football, he didn't pursue one football tryout at any time. The record shows he applied for one job after he was released to full-duty work, a finding that is not challenged on this appeal. And he accepted it, and that's been his only job effort since. So, number one, we don't have an established player. Number two, he did not engage in a structured and intense rehab program at the direction of the employer's physician that was designed to get him to return to professional play. He went in his own program without any consent by the team. The team's obligated to provide medical care by contract and did, and there is no contention in this record that the team did not provide full and adequate medical care. In fact, there's an award of permanent partial disability benefits that's unchallenged in this appeal. So the second element is not present. There's no intense rehab at the direction of an employer physician. Three, that there was a level of participation in Jones that was so intense that it precluded the claimant from seeking other employment. Not only did this claimant have the ability to seek other employment, he made inquiries. He never made a job application during the 10 months that he's claiming that he didn't have a duty to market. Not one job application. What he did, he reached out. He took an unpaid internship because he thought it'd be cool to look at sports from the other side. It was a Panini internship. He reached out to three universities. He contacted three athletic directors to pick their brain. So there wasn't a level of participation that would preclude him from seeking other employment. And finally, the player in Jones resumed professional hockey within 6 months. And again, this gentleman didn't attend or attempt one NFL tryout, and the only job he applied for was a non-football job, and he accepted that and never applied to another job since. So I hope that addresses your question. The other element is Jones was decided before the other Jones case, King William versus Jones, and that's the case that says when you're claiming wage loss, you've got to show a causal relationship that the wage loss is due to the injury. And Norfolk Admirals v. Jones didn't get to address that aspect, whether or not the causation element was addressed. But clearly in this case, we just have a personal career choice that this gentleman, rather than making any effort to obtain work, which he concedes he did not, that he's excused from that simply because he made the practice squad. And Jones doesn't hold that, and no holding of this court holds that. In fact, the decisions are consistent that to obtain disability benefits, you've got to show marketing and you've got to show causation. And I respectfully submit they're both absent in this case. There's several cases referenced that I think need to be addressed because they're not controlling. Epling versus Schultz Dining is a case where it's not controlling under these facts because the employee there was dismissed for absences unrelated to his injury, and this court said that he was entitled to show a cure. In this case, we have no dismissal from employment. And Holly Farms v. Carter merely held that when you have 8 days of disability claim, there's no duty to market, and that makes sense if you have someone that's going back to work for the same employer. But in this case, there was no expectancy, no reasonable expectancy of this man expecting that the Redskins or any other NFL team had interest in hiring him. And right now,
Mr. Tricola?
Yes.
Judge Decker, would you respond to the appellant's point about the fact that in the instant case, the Redskins did not put him on a regimen of rehabilitation as in the other case?
Well, he didn't ask for it, number one, and number two, he provided what was obligated under the contract. under the Act, I should say, we provide any medical care as requested under the Act. Now, bear in mind, this is not a gentleman who's under an NFL contract. He is under a practice contract, which is a week-by-week contract. So all the medical benefits that were required by statute were provided, and there's no contention in this record that he was asking for a structured program from the employer. And in this case, since he wasn't a player like the player in Jones who had a established contract and was an established player, the team is just most likely going to fulfill its obligations under the Act, because all this gentleman had would be an obligation to try out like any other player. And if you're not good enough, you're not going to make the team. And this gentleman didn't even want to try out. So I hope that answers your question. He never
it
asked
does,
for
thank
it.
You.
Holsey versus Pro Football is another commission case, very similar, where the claimant in that case was asking for disability benefits while undergoing rehabilitation. And the commission said there just wasn't enough evidence showing that the rehab was intense enough to warrant an exception. And in this case, I think it's important to look at the factual record here. We're talking about 10 months of where the claimant wants an excuse to market. December 18, 2015 to October 3, 2016. There's an unchallenged finding this gentleman was capable of working during that period. Unchallenged that he made no job searches during that period, the reason being he was going to play pro football. He may have been thinking that, but the actions are totally inconsistent. The job he ultimately took was one that was in the mid-range for people with a college graduate. So there's no question that not only did he make a marketing effort, but he didn't comply with any of the commission guidelines, didn't register with any employment agency. And the counter to this is, well, I didn't have to because I thought I was going to play pro football. So under these facts, where there's a total failure to make a reasonable effort to play, and there's no reasonable expectation of going back to a pro football career, the claimant has failed to meet the requirements of Jones to show that he's excused from marketing, and has also failed to show that there's a causally related wage loss. What this record shows is during that 10 months, the claimant was kind of feeling his way around, saying, am I going to play football? Am I going to get out of football? And when you read pages 450 to 453 of the record, you hear the claimant's, you can review the claimant's testimony about the efforts he made about considering employment, but there was certainly no concerted effort to try to get back into the professional field of pro football. So we have a gentleman who submitted no job applications during a 10-month period that he claims benefits, and after applying for a non-football job, he made no further employment efforts of any type. This is totally inconsistent with this aspirational goal of I didn't do anything to find work because I wanted to get back into pro football. And we respectfully submit that the record supports the commission finding that there was neither a reasonable nor good faith effort, and that the claimant failed to present facts that would put him within the Norfolk Admiral versus Jones holdings. And the record shows that not only was that legal finding correct, but that the claimant didn't show a causal relationship between this alleged wage loss and his injury. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Boscolo, you have your remaining rebuttal.
A couple of points, Judge Decker. First of all, you asked a question about the Redskins providing the structured intense program of rehabilitation. I want to direct the court's attention to page 3 of the standard player contract, which is in paragraph 7, which says the player receives medical and hospital care during the term of this contract as the club physician may deem necessary. So when the club decided to end his employment, their obligation to provide the kind of structured intense program ended under the terms of the contract, number one. Number two, what the Redskins are suggesting here is that the court should establish a different standard for a great player and a marginal player. can't imagine a workers' compensation system in which the skill level of the employee has anything to do with the entitlement to benefits. It has nothing to do with them. That's been their acts in this case all the way along, that Mr. Hamilton wasn't that good a player, and therefore he's not entitled to the protections of the Act. But that cannot be what the Act means. And then the third thing is...
Mr. Vosfellow, this is Judge Haley.
Yes, Judge.
Referring to the Redskins terminated his contract. Isn't it true that the contract self-terminates?
The contract, yes. The contract ends, and their obligation ends at the end of the contract.
That's 1 week.
No, this contract, when you read, no, because once he's injured, the contract is guaranteed until the end of the season. And you'll look at the standard player contract, and that, I believe, is paragraph 9 of the standard player contract, which guarantees his employment in the event of an injury. So, no, it's not 1 week, Your Honor. In this case, it was for the balance of the season, and nobody knows what would have happened had he not been injured, and so the terms of the contract govern. Not a one-week contract, a contract for the balance of the season. And then the third thing I want to say, the suggestion that nothing happened other than him sitting around for 10 months ignores his testimony at pages 89 to 91 in response to direct questions from Commissioner Sherrill, and also ignores the fact that in the middle of this period, he had a second surgery in April, and in less than 6 months after an open surgery, the man has finished his rehab, finished his conditioning, determined that he does not have the capacity to return to professional sports, and marvelously markets his residual wage earning capacity. This case is governed by Jones. And Mr. Hamilton should not be punished because the Redskins think he's less of a player than one of their superstars. That's not the way the Act works. That's
Counsel, thank you. Your time is up.
Yes.